Welcome and happy Hunger Games.
Can't the 17 to go up? Ah!
Because of her, they all think they're invincible.
You've given them an opportunity. People want to fight.
If you end all of this, our lives, they mean something.
We can take down the Capitol.
Now you're talking.
Tonight, turn your weapons to the Capitol.
This is the end.
You got one shot.
Let's make it count.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Variety Radio Online. And we are getting ready to talk about the final Hunger Games movie, Mockingjay Part 2. My name is Brancy, and I am joined tonight by Emily. Emily, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you, Brancy?
I am pretty good, but that trailer, that intro we just played, it's got me all emotional again.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got me just ready to talk about this, and I'm still denying that this is the end. But, anyways, so let's just first give an initial non-spoiler version of what we thought of the movie, and then all the people who have seen the movie can stick around and we'll get into the little nuances. So, with keeping as little spoilers in your description as possible, how did you feel about this movie?
I thought it was really good. It probably wasn't my favorite out of the entire series, but I thought that it had everything from the book that I was hoping would be in the book. And the only part for me was that it felt a little jumpy, but maybe that was mostly because it picked up pretty much exactly where the first half left off. So it felt like the action kind of punched you in the face right out of the way, which kind of threw me off for a little bit, but once I got the rhythm figured out of the movie, I enjoyed it for the most part, and I thought it was really well done, and Jennifer Lawrence, obviously amazing performance as Katniss, and Josh Hutcherson, kudos to him on all the awesome PETA stuff that happened in this movie, and yeah, overall, I think it was a pretty good movie.
I agree. I definitely love the movie. I thought it was a great way to end the series, and I agree the beginning was very fast-paced. I actually, sitting in the theater, thought that somehow our film had gotten skipped because I was like, that's not how they're going to start the movie. But obviously
yeah,
it was. Because as soon as I saw The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, I was like, oh, okay, that is the beginning. Because I was starting to panic a little bit in the theater, like, oh my God, what are we seeing? It's too soon for this. But other than that, yeah, I agree. All the actors definitely brought their A game for this, and it felt like a solid send-off to The Hunger Games. But yeah, I agree. It's not my favorite movie, just for curiosity's sake, which is your favorite movie?
Hands down, Catching Fire. It was my favorite book. I read all three, and I think that it was the most well done out of the three books in terms of like what they turned into a movie. Overall, that one just had like the best of everything. It was like there was the Hunger Games like part, which it was a little less brutal because it wasn't like children, because obviously that's kind of an intense thing. It was just more complex, and then so we got like the action, but it wasn't overloaded, because I feel like Mockingjay Part 2 was like all action and like no like subtle moments or like small moments. It was all just like in your face. So I feel like Catching Fire really kind of had the best of both worlds, where it was the soft personal moments between the characters and the intense action dramatic parts. So I felt like it blended everything together the best.
I agree 100%. Catching Fire was my favorite book, and it was my favorite film. So I'm very happy that they did that. And I actually, one of the big reasons I love Catching Fire so much is because we saw the stark difference between Gary Ross's Hunger Games and then Francis Lawrence transforming it into Catching Fire. And looking back on it, when I watched The Hunger Games, the very first movie, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then watching Catching Fire, it was like 20 times better because I feel like Francis Lawrence got it in a way that Gary Ross didn't.
Definitely. I think that when he came on, it just it made me realize, like, oh, man, I wish he would have been there from the beginning because it just I can't even imagine what the first Hunger Games movie would have been like if Francis Lawrence had been directing it because I feel like he just, like, understood the maybe just the way that the whole, like, the cinematography and the way everything was shot, it just all just kind of visually just stood out more in Catching Fire.
Yeah.
Plus, in Catching Fire, they did that awesome, like, I feel like it had never really been done before because I'm a total one of those people who loves to get the DVD and watch all the special features and all that stuff. So I feel like they mentioned that it was the first time they'd ever gone from standard to IMAX in the same movie. How once she came up into the arena, it like the screen widened out and it like they shot it in a completely different way. And I just think that all of that just added up to the best movie out of the four. Hands down.
Yes, I too watched the special feature, so I know exactly what you're talking about, and I loved that. So I'm very appreciative that we have Francis Lawrence to thank for these movies, besides the first one. Sorry, Gary Ross, but it's your own fault for leaving, first of all. So I'm not sorry for you.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with how you said that when I first saw The Hunger Games, like, I didn't think it could get any better than that. I thought it was such a good adaptation. Besides a few, like, subplots, it didn't really leave out all that much. Like, it hit all the main bases, I feel like, in terms of a movie adaptation. But, the second Francis Lawrence took the reins, it kind of just, like, stepped up to this whole other level. And I feel like the actors, like, their performances were even, like, got better. The script got better. Everything kind of got better. And it makes me wish that we had, a remade first movie just to kind of see what it would have been like.
Right. And I've seen that online, too. People have been like, okay, now that it's over, can we petition for Francis Lawrence to remake Hunger Games? That made me laugh. I was like, oh, gosh, if only. But, I agree that you can tell. And what I think I love the most about Francis Lawrence coming in is that I saw Gary Ross's vision. His vision was to put you in the tributes mindset and for you to see the difference between yourself and the Capitol. But I think because Francis Lawrence took it to a new cinematic level, we saw both sides.
Yeah,
we saw
for sure.
The over-dramatic version that the Capitol appreciates, which is what the games were so action-packed and everything. But then we see Katniss's side and Peeta's side with all the PTSD and everything, and I thought it was very great that they did that.
Yeah. I liked how Francis Lawrence, like, in the first movie, it was almost not that there really was much going on outside of Katniss's mind, because in the first movie, it pretty much is all, it's her experience, it's her everything, and there's not really, wasn't really room to stray away. Like, I feel like Gary Ross tried with those President Snow scenes up in the Rose Garden. Like, that was his attempt to kind of get out of Katniss's head for a little bit and kind of explain some of the plot points that they couldn't really explain easily without just, like, completely adding 5 hours to the movie. So I feel like he tried. I feel like that was, like, his attempt. It didn't work as well as, like, how Francis Lawrence kind of just, like, he wove it in more subtly. It wasn't so like, oh, there's half an hour of the games and then one scene with President Snow, and that's how we get our explanation. Like Francis Lawrence, it was like constantly cutting between both perspectives, so it kind of just wove it all together in a better way. And I feel like he did the same thing in Mockingjay, because obviously the book, that's all in her head. It's a lot of her feeling really emotional and suffering from, you know, her PTSD and all this other stuff. And a lot of people didn't, I feel like a lot of people didn't like Mockingjay as a book, which I don't get, because I like, sure, it was depressing, but I liked it. I thought it was a good book, but I was pleasantly surprised at how well it translated onto the screen. And I think that definitely has a lot to do with Francis Lawrence and his awesome ability to kind of get out of Katniss's head, and he wasn't afraid to tell a story, add a few things to kind of balance it out, and just make it awesome.
Right. I definitely appreciated his vision, and I'm very happy with the result. I'm sad to see it go, but we must move on with our lives, unfortunately.
We must.
But, okay, so all of you listening that maybe you haven't seen the movie yet, I don't know why you're listening to this in the first place. You should watch it first. But we're going to be moving into some spoilers now. So if you're listening and you haven't seen the movie yet and you would not like to hear any of the spoilers, I would turn off the podcast now. So...
You've had
your fair warning. You've had your warning. Let's jump right in to talk about the moments of the movie. The biggest thing that I think we have to focus on here are a lot of the fights, deaths that we are unfortunately met with. And what I appreciate about The Hunger Games is that I feel they have an adequate balance of who lives and who dies. Of course, there's two very big characters that die in this movie. I'm still bitter about that.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. So let's just talk about those. Let's get them out of the way. So the very first big death scene that we have, I'm tearing up, the love of my life, Finnick O'Dare. And I was so depressed in the theater. As soon as they went down into the little sewer system, I was like, oh, my God, it's coming. I know, it's coming.
I know. It was like going into the movie. Well, in part because originally with part one, we didn't know where they were going to split it. So in your mind, you don't know, I knew, obviously, some of the other deaths that happened later, but Phoenix was in a place where I didn't know if it was going to happen in the first half or the second half.
Right.
So once it didn't happen in the first half, I was like, well, it's going to happen, soon into, within the first half of the second movie. And, the second they went down in the sewer, I was just like, no, couldn't we have avoided this somehow? We changed other things in the movie. Can't we change this?
I said that exact same thing, and I saw that online, and they were like, maybe that one thing won't happen to that one character. And I... genuinely, I was so tense in the whole fight scene with the Mutts. And as soon as he gets on the ladder, I was like, oh, my God, they're going to do it. They're going to let him live. And then that damn thing jumps up and hits his leg. And I was like, oh, my God, no.
Yeah, they kind of made it. They made it more. Because in the book, it's very, subtle, which I guess is more true to life. Real life, obviously they're running away and he gets swept up and she doesn't have time to think about it or, stop and wonder what happened. They just have to keep going. So in the book, it's a very fleeting moment and there's not a lot of attention given to it. And it's one of those things where you read it and you have to reread it 5 times. Cause you're like, wait, did they really just die? That was a 2-sentence death. And normally people kind of go out in a bigger fashion, but Suzanne Collins kind of was I feel like she kept it more accurate to what would be really going on in someone's head. If you were running away, fleeing for your life, you wouldn't have time to kind of stop and watch. But in the movie, obviously, for dramatic effect, they had to beef it up a little bit, which I was definitely okay with because in the book, it kind of devastated me that he got 4-word mention and then he was just gone. So I...
yes, I see what you mean.
I appreciated that they kind of amped up his death. I definitely understand why it was the way it was in the book, and I agree with the way it happened in the book, but it just, in terms of translating to the screen, it definitely needed that little bit of a extra drawn out time for people to really process, he kind of fought for his life but didn't succeed. And so I was satisfied with the way it was handled in the movie.
I was as well because, see, I appreciate where Suzanne Collins is coming from with the book death, that that is very much how war is. You don't have the time to think about it in that instant because you've got to focus on you and you living. So, and they even you know, they still kept it kind of brief when she's acknowledging that Finnick has died once they get out of that situation. And I actually liked that they kept it very brief and didn't make, like, this whole big Katniss breaking down scene or anything, because that is how it is in real life. You have time to mourn later. You don't have time now. But I do appreciate that they gave him a little bit more of a hero's death, because he deserved it.
Yeah.
Still emotional. I'm still pretty emotional about Finnick, and I will never not be emotional about Finnick.
I know. Especially after that whole, the whole, like, wedding scene and everything. It's just, it makes it that much harder to deal with, which, again, like you said, like, Suzanne Collins, I don't think one of the best parts about the series is just you, it makes you, like, it puts, like, a mirror to, like, our society and our lives, and it makes you, like, realize, like, oh, this is it. This might be, like, a fantasy world in a way, but it's really not. Like, this is what happens in real life. This is what happens, like, when there's war and there's destruction. Like, and it, so, it's just so sad, but I just...
I know.
I appreciate the art that she has created and just
yes.
the kind of message that she gave to the world, and it, I feel like, especially nowadays, it's really appropriate, and a lot of people could learn a lot from reading these books, watching these movies, so it definitely gets a thumbs up from me.
Yes, I have a lot of emotions about Finnick and the series in general, but I do very much appreciate that there is an underlying theme and message from the movies that you have to take away from, and they present the information to you in such a way that you enjoy it and you get so into it that you're not really consciously aware of the fact that you are seeing a reflection of your own life in a way. And I appreciate the way that they do that. So I'm still very emotional about Finnick, and I will continue to be so. But I think that it's very fair the way it was represented. And what kills me, though, about Finnick, and I will never, ever be over this, is the fact that Annie was pregnant, and I don't think I'll ever cope with that.
Yeah, that one's a tough one to swallow.
I think that's the first
Especially at the end, when PETA was, like, reading the letter from Annie, it's just kind of like, it was so sad. Like, it was sad in a subtle way. Like, cause, you know, at the end, it's kind of, it was a little bit more half hopeful and happy, but then it's kind of like there's that layer of reminder of, like, this is, you know, tragic and we need to learn from this and that whole kind of thing. And it's so, it was just that subtle hint of tragedy, like, layered in, woven in with the outlook of the future that Katniss and PETA had. And, you know, now that the rebellion's over, the Hunger Games are over, like, the capital's gone, like, it just, it was a nice reminder, just subtle reminder that things are good, but we have to remember that we can't go back to that place. And just, I liked the ending, the epilogue part, but I feel like we can get more into that later. But that little moment with Annie in the water was a nice touch, I thought.
Yes, I did appreciate that. And it was a good way to show to the audience, because non-book readers may not have caught that if it had been an offhanded comment, but I think including the photo made it more clear to people who had not read the books what had happened. And even though it is incredibly tragic, I think it's also in a way good for her, because I know Annie is very emotionally and mentally unstable after her games, and Finnick was always the one to bring her back, which he also did for PETA in this movie, which I really, really liked that they added, because it was more subtle in the books. And I think that the child that she had is going to be, and we never see it happen, but we are to assume that the child is what helps her cope.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, I guess I never said that way when I read or saw the movie, but it definitely makes a lot of sense now that you say that, you know, because you don't really, in the book or in the movie, obviously, like, it was never really, like, addressed fully, like, whatever happened to Annie after Finnick died, like, because it was so, you know, especially in the book, it's all in Katniss's head, and it was, you didn't really ever, once the war was over, they just kind of did the epilogue, and that was it. So besides knowing that her son, her child, like, they're okay, but I never really thought about the fact that she is, like, holding on to the last piece of him that she has, and that grounds her and keeps her sane and, like, helps her get through everything. And so I think that's a really beautiful thing that they added.
Yeah. As hard as it is to accept the fact that he's dead, at least we have this little bit of hope that she did find a way to still have someone to keep her solid, which I like, but, you know, Finnick could have lived, too, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, I have to accept, of course, it can't be an everybody lives happily ever after. There has to be someone. And we have two someones, which we're going to move into now. The one person that Katniss ever set out to protect is the one person that dies right in front of her in this movie. So let's talk about Prim.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That was a pretty, pretty big death to swallow. And it's so hard because the whole reason that any of this happened was to protect Prim, and she dies in a second.
Especially in the movie. Like, when it happened in the book, I was kind of, like, in shock. I couldn't believe. And then, obviously, in the book, we get this kind of, like, entire chapter of her kind of wallowing, and she's in Snow's mansion and, like, getting ready to kill him, and, like, there's all, you hear all that in the movie. It felt even more, like, I feel like it flip-flopped. It, like, Finnick's death in the book was super short and, like, not drawn out at all. In the movie, it was kind of grand and, you know, spectacular. But in the movie, I feel like Prim's death was, like, in the blink of an eye. And in the book, it was, like, drawn out in terms of her grieving. And
right.
I just felt like it happened so fast in the movie. Like, I knew it was coming, obviously. They're, like, all flooding towards the Capitol. The hovercraft comes in, and I'm like, okay, this is it. But I felt like, I don't know if it's because we didn't, since it was so much action, like, throwing in our faces, that it was like they missed a little on, like, the, like, if you didn't read the book, you probably really wouldn't know what was going on. Because I feel like the second she died, it just happened, like a snap. So,
right.
Which, obviously, it's true to life, like, death isn't really a drawn-out thing, especially in war, but I felt like there was, like, one piece missing that would have, like, made it make sense more to people watching who didn't
right.
know what was going to happen, because it just kind of happened, and then it was, boom, next scene, Katniss is getting suited up in her armor, and she has her little Nightlock pill that she puts, and it's like all the details were kind of subtle that I feel like you didn't want to read the books, you really wouldn't have picked up on what she was doing.
Right, and I even tried to place myself in the mindset of someone who hadn't read the book when I was watching it, and I tried to do my best to pinpoint the moment when people would kind of figure out what was about to happen, but I still heard the shocked gasps across the theater, so... Yeah, for those of you who didn't read the books, it was a big surprise. But, of course, you know, as soon as you see them heading towards Snow's mansion, you know what's happening if you've read the books. You know what's about to happen. And as soon as the parachutes fall, you know this is the end. So I tried to pay attention to the other people in the theater because I knew what was going to happen. But I didn't know if they knew. And clearly, some of them did, some of them did not. But her death was very quick, and we just move very fast. And instead of getting that mindset of Katniss grieving, we instead get a scene with her and Buttercup, which made me really emotional.
Yeah, that was the one thing. I feel like the emotion tied to her death was delayed. It wasn't like, which is like we said, like, oh, in war, you don't have time to grieve then, it happens later, which I guess is kind of what they did in this movie. But there was, I don't know if they were trying to make it less graphic. Maybe this was the PG-13 element kind of happening, where they obviously didn't want to show a crowd full of children being blown to bits. So
right.
That might have been why Prim's death felt like so, not swept under the rug, but kind of like happened in a flash, and then they moved on so quickly that you would have missed it if you blinked.
Right.
So it could have been the PG-13 kind of hindering them from really giving it its full, like, everything that it was in the book. But Yeah, it was just kind of happened so fast, but I definitely agree that the Buttercup scene was just, Jennifer Lawrence was great, and you really felt the emotion, and Katniss, just everything was, it was just the whole part once she was back in 12, kind of, that was when all the emotions kind of came flooding in, because everything was so kind of rapid fire quick up until that point, and that was like the first time the movie kind of slowed down. And you got to process all the things that happened, and so I thought it was nice the way that they did that, but I wish, still kind of wish it would have been a little bit more detailed in terms of princess.
Right, and it could have even been something small, like when she's getting ready to assassinate Snow, we could have had just maybe a couple moments where we see her just like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
like before,
you see what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, like leading up to it, like instead of it was, if I remember correctly, it's been, you know, a little over a week since I've seen it. So I just, in my mind, I remember like her dying, it went to black, and then all of a sudden we see Effie kind of like getting her ready to execute Snow. There was no like, oh wait, no, she went to the greenhouse with him, right? Now that I remember, now I'm thinking about it. Did she talk to him first? But, yeah, I agree. If they would have had this, like, a small kind of, like, minute devoted to her, kind of, like, maybe to show, like, a lapse of time of her kind of, like, grieving in a way, or even if she wasn't outwardly grieving, just to show that she was kind of shell-shocked and didn't know what to do. And it, we kind of got a little bit of that in the hospital when her mom kind of started sniffling. We kind of, then that's when it kind of, it probably clicked for a lot of people, like, oh, she's dead, like, her sister died, like, wow. So, there were little things, but I feel like it definitely could have just needed, like, one more piece to make it, like, the full picture to make sense.
I agree. And I don't know if it's, maybe it could be a deleted scene, because I know a great majority of the film had to get cut, if I'm correct, I think it's heard something 20 to 30 minutes had to get cut or something like that. So it may turn
it
up
could,
in the deleted
it could
scenes,
be.
But yeah, I agree. If we had just maybe one little thing extra in there, then I would have appreciated that. But of course we have several smaller deaths throughout the movie. The death of Boggs, her whole squad virtually.
Yeah.
But the other slightly less important death would probably be the moment when she is meant to assassinate Snow, but she in fact assassinates Al McCoy instead. For a lot of people in the theater, I sense that they were shocked. But some people, I think, kind of got it when she was heading up there. And she had that look in her eye. And after her talk with Snow in the greenhouse, she kind of figured it out. So I know there's a lot of debate in the books about this. But, you know, she had to go. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think the one thing that Frances Lawrence really did that I feel like, not that the book get into, but maybe just I wasn't reading closely enough when I first read the books and reread the books. Like, obviously, once I knew what happened, then I probably picked up on more. But he really kind of laid in that doubt of Katniss, like, of Coin. Like, it was apparent, especially because there were two movies, there was a lot of time for the relationship to kind of, like, flourish. In the book, it was kind of just Katniss's brief interactions with her. That's like all we really got. But in the movie, like obviously there were scenes that Katniss wasn't there with Plutarch and Coin, and just we kind of got where her mind was at, and she kind of had this dangerous thinking going on too. So I think that, well, a lot of people might not have been as shocked as maybe some people were when they read the book. But yeah, I agree. I really liked how, especially in the second half, it seemed like Katniss was completely distrusting of Coin and Boggs, especially. It was like, not Boggs, is it Boggs, the commander? Yeah, that's what I thought. I was thinking of the twin, the Avox. But when he died, it's like, that was just like the one moment where I feel like it finally might have clicked for people who didn't know, like, oh, wow, like, when he said the next best thing for you would be to die. Like, that would help her out more than you living. And then I feel like that maybe that was the moment when they kind of, we really for sure understood that Coin is basically the same as Snow. She's got the same motivation. She just masks it behind this kind of like rebellious, like, I'm going to be the savior of the people kind of thing. And so I agree. she definitely needed to go.
In definitely.
The movie, she was not going to be useful to the future at all. So
not at all. But yeah, I do appreciate that they set it up a little bit earlier. For those of you who hadn't read the books, you kind of got the glimpse into what's going on. So it wasn't as shocking when it actually happened. But maybe it was just because it had been so long since I had read the books. But I guess I had forgotten what happened to Snow. And seeing it play out on the screen was like, oh, my God. It just, like, trampled him. It was wild.
Yeah, I remember, I feel like, I don't know if it was just the way I pictured it in the book. Because, obviously, that always kind of turns out a little bit differently than when you see it on screen.
Right.
But for whatever reason, imagined Katniss shooting an arrow from a balcony. I don't know if that was a descriptive thing somewhere or if I just made that up in my head. But for whatever reason, when I pictured that scene the two or three times I read the book, it was almost like he was out in the courtyard. She was shooting from his, like, you know, balcony. And so when they had it, like, in the tributes parade area, and it was just this big spectacle, I couldn't remember if I'm like, is it supposed to be this way? I would have to reread the book, obviously. But so I remember that he choked, like, in the book, it says that he, like, choked on his own blood, like,
right.
From laughing so hard. But I think they added, like, the stampede as, like, for dramatic effect to kind
right.
of, like, give the rebels kind of some kind of resolution. But when I was watching it, I kind of, like, was questioning, like, is that what happened in the book? I don't really remember. It's been a few years. But so it was a nice, if it wasn't in the book, it was a nice touch to kind of give them to resolve the rebels kind of quest for Snow's death, I guess.
Yes. I agree. Okay, so let's see. What do we want to do next? Would you like to talk about some of the book quotes that we got? I was very appreciative
sure,
that we got
yes.
these. I was really appreciative. I really
there
loved
few,
that they
sure.
threw in Katniss repeating what we hear Peeta say in the first movie, I'm done being a piece in their games. I really liked that. And I
yeah,
can't remember
that was,
if that was in the book or not, but I liked it.
I don't think so. I normally, like, especially in Catching Fire, this happened, obviously, so when Francis Lawrence took over, I feel like more of the book, like, dialogue-wise made it into the movie than the first movie. So whenever a book quote comes out, I would get so excited. So I don't think that is exactly a quote from Mockingjay, but it definitely did add a nice kind of, it brought everything full circle, especially with the way things turn out with Peeta and Katniss, obviously.
Yeah.
In the end, it comes down to her, like, protecting him, like they always have. So it's a nice kind of subtle hint to kind of show that where her mind is at, and that he's kind of the second most important thing to her, aside from trying to save her sister, obviously.
Right.
But he kind of crept his way into her life, and she wasn't going to be able to live her life without him in it somehow. So I liked
yes.
that.
I definitely liked that. And I also really loved the way they brought out the real or not real game.
My heart was just... let me tell you, that is, like, my all-time, hands-down, like, more heartbreaking. Like, every time I think about it, it's just, I get really emotional about those parts because,
I
don't know, especially the last one, the You Love Me, Real or Not Real. I got really weepy about it, and before the movie came out, they had, like, released the one from the sewers where he's like, they're still trying to protect me, real or not real. And I was, like, having a lot of feelings about it. So any of those quotes that made it in, I was really happy with. However, I wish there would have been, like I said before, Mockingjay Part 2 was just a lot of action thrown in your face. And there wasn't a lot of time for a lull for quiet moments aside from, like, the sewer and a couple other parts. So I kind of missed out on the, like, PETA and Katniss kind of, like, slowly rebuilding their relationship with each other. I felt like in the movie it kind of was like, oh, all of a sudden PETA's getting brought out to the mission. And they had barely interacted at all. And so it seemed kind of off to me, but I was happy that they kept the real or not real.
Yeah, if they hadn't kept that, there would have been a fight from me. I almost would have appreciated even maybe just one or two more, because I know they happened a little more frequently in the books, but I do like that they still kind of showed the interaction going on between PETA and Katniss in a more subtle way, almost, because we have Haymitch reminding her where she says she doesn't want to see him, and he's like, well, it's not for you, it's for PETA. And I think when you're reading the book, you lose that a little bit, because you're so focused on Katniss's thoughts that to someone who's just skimming it and not really reading into the actual meaning of it can just be like, oh, well, she doesn't even care about him. But the way they represent it in the movies, I think, helps bridge that gap with Haymitch saying it's not really for you, it's for him. And we see Finnick helping him, helping PETA gain his sense of reality again.
Yeah,
I think
especially
those little things helped.
When he brought up the, because Finnick brings up, just ask, like, is it ask if it's real? That's what Annie does, and I think that happened in the book too, but because that's how he came up with the whole thing, or was it from the doctors? I can't remember. Because it was at the beginning of the movie where she, like, the nurse or whatever said, okay, repeat after me. My name is Katniss Everdeen. I'm from District 12. That whole thing. But
yes.
I felt like, and then the other thing that now I'm just remembering as I'm thinking of it, that they kind of left out in terms of PETA and Katniss, like, rebuilding all, like, friendship and then, you know, relationship with each other, was Finnick's, like, not tying. That, like, kind of helped them, like, soothe their minds in a way. Like, but that was more so, I think, when PETA was in the Capitol and he was captured. It was, like, right after the game. But that was just a small part that would have added to the whole, you know, relationship rebuilding situation.
Right. And I think going in with the knot tying, I think we see maybe only, like, one scene of that, and it was in part one. So, and I also appreciated when they brought PETA in to out in the field when they're getting ready to have him shoot the propos and everything. We have him, and you can barely hear it, but he's whispering to himself, my name is PETA Mallark, I'm from District 12. And I liked how they reflected that with what Katniss would do and him saying it. And it was very small that you almost don't catch it, but when you do, it's worthwhile.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It just, everything from the last, like, 2 minutes of part one onward was just, like, actually pretty much all of both movies combined, my favorite slash, not favorite, but most, I was most impressed by was everything to do with PETA. Like, in part one, it was, like, that way they showed his, like, drastic transformation, like, he got so scary, scary, like, starved and just terrifying looking by the end. And then, you know, when he tried to choke Katniss, and then the last shot of the first movie is him, like, thrashing in the bed, like, as Coin is kind of talking over him about this rebellion. And then everything that happened after that in the second movie, just, PETA is, like, my favorite character from the books.
Oh,
so
I know.
I was, like, beyond satisfied with the way that everything with him played out in the movies, besides, like, wishing that there had been a little bit more in part two in terms of him, like, rebuilding trust with people. I did like that he kind of, especially when he asked them to kill him, he was like, I'm a danger, and it just broke my heart. I just thought that was a really heartbreaking but well-done moment from the books when he kind of realized he was a danger to everybody else and he didn't want to be.
Right. I agree. And one of the best quotes from the books that we got to see, which I didn't realize that I needed it in the movie so much until it happened, and it's when they're doing the whole real or not real scene. And it's a lot more drawn out than I pictured it in the books, I think, but where Katniss lays out all the things she knows about him. She says, you're a painter,
you're
a baker, you like to sleep with the windows open, you never take sugar in your tea, and you always double knot your shoelaces. And she just walks off, and I was like, wow.
That hit you. That's probably like my favorite quote from the books in terms of like a Peeta and Katniss related quote. So the second she started saying that, like, my eyes instantly got really just, I was, like, trying not to cry because I was in a theater full of, like, people I didn't know, obviously, and since I had gone to an advanced screening, so it was a lot of, like, people from the media were around me, and I just felt like, I'm like, I can't act like a super fan right now. I kind of have to, like, be professional. And it was very hard for me to, like, sit there next to one of my coworkers and just not openly weep. So I still have yet to see the movie a second time, which I plan on doing, so I can fully express all of my emotions and just kind of let it all fly when I see it the second time. But that moment is the one that I really had to fight to stay composed, right? That was one quote that if it wasn't in the movie, I was going to be pretty upset. So I was, when she started saying that, I was beyond happy.
And it was on my list, but I think the way they did it in the movies was just so perfect because they drew it out in a way that it kind of sunk in for you really slowly. Like, oh my God.
Like how much, like, that was just a moment. Cause like you had said, a lot of the times it's hard to tell in the book, like how much she really cares for Peeta, and that's why a lot of people get confused, or they think, oh, maybe her and Gale is better or whatever, for whatever reason. But I think that like that moment is like the moment when you really realize that she really, really loves him. And then on top of that, then once she falls asleep, when Peeta and Gale are talking to each other, is just like the secondary part that kind of really drives it home. In the movie, I don't think they used the exact quote, like, she's going to pick whichever one of us, like, she can't live without. I think they did a variation on that somehow, but that part really solidified it for me when I was reading the movie today, that, like, well, she's going to choose Peeta. Like, they experienced the same things. Like, Gale, there's just something about Gale, like, he's just never going to understand completely what she's going through, and regardless of if it's, like, Peeta's in her life as just, like, a support system or, like, a romantic person, it's, like, if she had to pick between the two of them, like, she's obviously going to pick Peeta.
Right.
It seems so logical to me when I read it. I was like, oh, yeah, of course she picked him, obviously.
Right. Yeah, and I think for a lot of people... Ignore that. It'll still keep recording, guys. But, yeah, because there's no way we can end in 90 seconds. But, yeah, it'll continue recording. But, yeah, that whole quote for me, and it just killed me. And I think that people who maybe either didn't read the books or for some reason thought that she was going to end up with Gale, I don't know. Because to me, the second time reading the books, the first time I could kind of see... I hate that. The first time reading the books, I could kind of see where people were coming from and like, oh, well, maybe it could be Gale. But then reading them the second time and paying more attention to the little details, I think it was never going to be Gale. And he even says that. He says, she never kissed me the way that she did with you in the games.
Yeah. And then especially the whole part about how obviously when she, which I thought was, so I'm so pleased with the way it played out in the movie, because I feel like in the book it wasn't, I don't know if it was this cold in terms of Katniss's reaction to Gale, like she kind of confronts him about whether or not he designed the bomb that killed his sister or not, but so she kind of in the movie like really kind of it drove home easily because the way she's like just said goodbye, Gail, and then
yes.
that was it. And that was the last time we saw him in the movie. It just kind of really just showed you how, like, how much so that he, the way his attitude and his, like, views just did not click with hers after, like, the games. Like, they changed her. They weren't the same people they were when they started out. Like, they weren't going to be able to be in their, each other's lives anymore without a lot of issues. So I really liked how they played that out in the movie.
Right. I was definitely satisfied that we had a very firm idea of what was going on because, you know, in fandom, there's always going to be speculation because in the book, it's not as clear and we're not really sure. So you're left to wonder, well, can they repair this? Can they ever come back to what they once were? And I think a lot of people, especially in fan fiction, like to believe that they would. But I think that it was, we kind of needed that definite goodbye. And when she said goodbye, we definitely know it's goodbye. There is no
yeah.
question. This one is goodbye. And the way he reacts to that and just walks out, he kind of accepts it. And you just know, even though we don't really see any more of him at all after that moment, you just know.
Yeah.
It's never.
Besides, like, the mention, obviously, in the letter when she says, and he says, oh, like, Gail's working in District 2. You know, we got that in the book, too. Like, Captain
yeah.
finds out that Gail is still, like, being a soldier. You know, he's being a soldier somewhere, whatever. Like, and
right.
I think she mentions in the book, I think, like, if she were to see him, like, she wouldn't not speak to him. Like, obviously, at that point, it had been, like, years later, so she probably would still be civil towards him or whatever. But I just feel like if a lot of people going into the movies probably thought that Gail and Katniss were, like, a couple, because I, like, more so than her and Peeta, because I feel like a lot of, in the movie, obviously, just in terms of the way they promoted it and just the way that they had to add things in to kind of make it more appealing to the masses. They
right.
had to amp up the love story. They had to kind of, I felt like there was just a lot more kissing between her and Gail than I ever remember there being in the books. And
yes!
Slightly bothered by that because I was just like,
yes.
they kissed like 3 times maybe and they're just throwing in all these random kisses between her and Gail and I'm just like, I don't know how I feel about this, but
right.
So I feel like people going into Mockingjay probably might get confused if
yes.
then they realize, like, oh, all of a sudden out of nowhere, like, she barely interacted with Peeta in the movie, and then all of a sudden they're, like, together in the end, which, you know, but I think the moment that really, like, might have solidified it for people is when they see that Peeta came back, he was planting flowers in the garden for her, like, she didn't ask him to come. He just was there. And
yes.
that's just the way that it kind of happened. I feel like he came back and they just were there supporting each other. And then they just kind of naturally reformed this bond where they just realized like they were going to live the rest of their lives together. And why not be happy and be together, I guess. So it was
right.
never an overly romantic thing, but
yeah.
it's just the support and the emotional bond just was, I feel like it's very beautiful the way it was written and the way it was played out. And they're one of my favorite, like, fictional relationships. And
oh, I feel that. I feel that, though. I feel that. So I don't know if there were a couple of girls in the theater with me, and I don't know if they hadn't read the books or if they were Team Gail or if they were both. But they seemed genuinely shocked when she said goodbye to him. And I was like, well, maybe it's just because I love Peeta so much. But to me, it never seemed like it was going to be Gail because of the way that I saw it. But, you know, for some other people, there was that hope. But I think we needed that goodbye because people had to realize it was never going to be him. And we get a little bit more of it in the book, which is in the epilogue even. She goes into it more, but...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of emotions.
Yeah. Just the whole description in the epilogue, obviously, of how she described, like, oh, you know, she basically lays it out, like, oh, her and Peeta, like, at first, for the first however many years, like, they weren't even really together. They were just kind of, the two of them were really the only people in District 12, at least where they were living. And so all they had was each other. And then eventually, then, you know, like, continue with the whole real or not real thing, and he asks her, like, oh, you love me, real or not real, and then she finally says, like, the first time she's ever said it ever, like, oh, real, like, yes, I do love you, and then she obviously had never said that she wanted children before, but then just, she had to, like, allow herself to get to a place where she could be happy and life could move on, and she knew that, like, with PETA, like, having a family, like, they both would be there to kind of support and raise this new life together, and so, yeah, the whole epilogue thing just...
epilogue messes me up.
and in the movie, too, it was just to see it visualized, like,
yeah.
See Katniss, like, holding their child and kind of, like, talking to it, and the way they kind of had to obviously sum up what she had said in longer words in the epilogue about, oh, they, you know, we're gonna teach you what, like, why I have nightmares and why I do this, and we're gonna remember the people we lost, and to see, like, PETA playing with their other child.
Oh my God, it died.
It had this nice, like, pretty glow to it, you know, the sunshine, it was all hopeful, and I was like, oh, that was just, yeah, that was probably the best ending they could have ever done, and
right.
Especially that they used the line from the book, the there were scenes to play. I just...
Yes.
I walked out of the theater, and I was, like, on cloud nine. I was like, oh, my. That was, like, the perfect ending. All the stuff in between doesn't matter. The ending was just perfect. I don't really care what the rest of the movie was like.
I know. The whole epilogue just kills me, but... You know, and I was wondering how they were going to handle the epilogue, because we obviously, in the book, it is entirely her thought, and it's not any dialogue whatsoever. So I was wondering how they would handle it, if they were going to do like a voiceover or what, but I thought it was very smart that they handled it the way they did, with her talking to her child.
Yeah, I thought too, maybe it would be some kind of voiceover, like, oh, because obviously the last thing that we see of... before the epilogue is kind of, I'm trying to think. Is it when she says, like, the real or not real part with PETA?
Right.
When it's like, oh, you love me, real or not real. But before that, really, like, before they go back to 12, the last kind of impression we get from everything is that her and Haymitch vote to have the Capital kids, like, go into another Hunger Games, and then they kind of just, like, move on. So I felt that the epilogue was, like, their way to kind of show that things were healed. Like, obviously, District 12 wasn't this barren kind of wasteland anymore. It was, like, beautiful meadows and flowers and
yes.
The sun was shining, and it just, like, there was hope for the future. And so I think it was a nice little bow tie to the to the end of the series, kind of end the series and tie it off and send it off in a good way.
And it just kills me thinking about it, because it was just too perfect. But even going into the book, you obviously get a little bit more of the epilogue, because she explains even, you know, why it was always going to be PETA. Say that, you know, Gale, he's got too much fire. He's too much like me. What I need...
I needed the dandelion.
The dandelion in the spring, and I just... I don't know! If you see, because they couldn't say it, which, I mean,
I
think they could have said it, honestly, and I think one of the things that I love about Francis Lawrence is he gave us that little nod to all the book readers, and they had, you know, PETA with their son, and they have a dandelion there, and I was like, thank you, Francis.
Yeah, I don't even think I was just too wrapped up in just everything else about the epilogue, but I noticed that he was, like, had some, like, flowers or whatever he had, but, like, it didn't really click in my head that he was holding a dandelion, because I was, like, so focused on, like, what Katniss was saying, and, like, oh, how are they going to tie in the book ending, like, is it going to be the last line in the movie, is going to be the quote from the book, like, I was kind of wrapped up in all of it, so I'm really glad that you pointed that out, because I didn't even notice that, and now I'm kind of really emotional about
it. Yes,
it
just wrecked me.
Yeah.
Because I really wanted it to be in the movie somehow, and when she didn't say it, I was a little bit upset, but then I noticed that they were holding a dandelion, and I was like, okay, Francis, I'll give you.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the time, not a lot of the time, but I guess mostly just my mind instantly went to the first movie and how the ending scene with Peeta and Katniss kind of got botched in the first movie in terms of, like, the lines. How they really changed it. They didn't really use anything from the book. I really wanted, in the first movie, it to end with the, like, I don't want to pretend, or whatever, I forget what the real line is now, because I've seen the movie so many times. The way they did it in the movie, I don't think it did it justice in terms of the way that it could have been done. So I was really happy with the way that everything was handled in the end of Mockingjay Part 2, because it really, like, the beautiful ending that Suzanne Collins wrote was, like, 100% shown off in the movie. So
right.
It was, you couldn't really ask for much more.
Yeah, there wasn't much that we could ask for there. I think Francis Lawrence handled it beautifully, and even though I didn't have the words, just having the dandelion there, and those of you who, you know, you read the books and you just know, and I think that was enough for me to just know.
Yeah. The other thing I feel like that Francis Lawrence, or it might not have even been Francis Lawrence, but through this in, it might have been Elizabeth Banks' idea, was,
because
yes. I like how she threw in Catching Fire, she kind of ad-libbed that, oh, mahogany line, because the way that people reacted to it in the first movie. So I feel like Elizabeth Banks probably, I really want to believe, had some hand in this. She probably went to Francis Lawrence and said, hey, we have this whole faction of fans who think that Effie and Haymitch are, like, the cutest thing ever. Like, we need to give them a little something-something. And the fact that when he said, like, oh, Effie, don't be a stranger, obviously that wasn't in the book, because Effie was literally in Mockingjay for 5 seconds in the book.
Yes.
Enough to find out that she was still alive, and that was it. So that was, like, the one thing about this whole Mockingjay, like, book to movie that I really liked, that how they... Francis Lawrence, like, knew he had a good thing in Elizabeth Banks playing Effie, and he wasn't about to waste it, so he kind of wove her back into the story, even though it wasn't that way in the book, which I think was just a really good idea, because Effie and Elizabeth Banks were great.
Yes, and I was appreciative of that. I was surprised that they did the full peck there. I thought they were going just for the kiss on the cheek, and that was going to be enough to let you know something's going to happen. But no, they went straight for it, and I was like,
okay. Smack on the lips. I was like, whoa, okay.
Like, okay. And I saw online, everybody was like, there was one person on Tumblr who was like, you know what, I don't even wholeheartedly ship it, but I am so proud of you, Haymitch and Effie shippers. You finally got your moment. And I was like, oh,
I know,
God.
Really? I liked their dynamic together. I never really thought that they were anything romantic, but I just really liked that subtle little nod to the fans that Elizabeth Banks kind of became known for in the movies. So I thought it was a fun moment. It kind of broke the tension for a brief time, and it was something fun that they got to add into the movie, which I really thought was a good idea.
Definitely. And reading the book, I never really interpreted it that way. But in the movie, you know, it's just Elizabeth Banks is just so fabulous. So you can't help but see it in the movies.
Yeah, she was better than anything I could ever have imagined Effie. Like,
right.
In the books, I don't know if I was ever overtly attached to Effie. But in the, just them, the four of them, Peeta, Katniss, Haymitch, and Effie, like, as a team, just, I loved that group of, the group of them together, their dynamic, it just worked so well in the movies that I don't know if I really got that in the books, so I really liked how that was one part about the movies that really kind of stood out to me more so than in the books, that the four of them together was just, like, the perfect group of people.
It really was, and I think that I really liked the way that they handled that moment between Haymitch and Effie, because it was something to give the shippers out there something to hold on to, but it also wasn't too abrupt that everybody who's naturally watching it is like, whoa, whoa, what's happening? You know, it was kind of like a hint at what's to come later in their lives rather than, okay, I guess we're in a relationship now.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that. Because people who aren't, like, watching it and really analyzing it a lot, like so many of us do who have read the books and everything, they're not really going to catch the subtleties. So I liked that they kind of gave you that in an obvious way, but it wasn't overblown or anything. So it was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a nice little moment, and I appreciated it. And just, I appreciated it for what it was. Obviously, like we said, Effie wasn't anywhere in Mockingjay in the book. So it was just overall just nice to have her in the movie and then to have that cute little moment, which kind of felt like, because that was the last time we saw Effie in terms of in the movie. So it was and Hamish, I think. So that was like a nice little send-off for their characters.
Right. I believe, or maybe I'm remembering it incorrectly, but I believe that we see Hamish for just a second in District 12.
Yeah. I think you're right.
It's not anything huge, but it's a little bit. And, you know, in the books, we get a little bit more. We get the random comment that he raises geese, which is nice. But I'm glad that they showed him in 12, even if it was just for a second. Because what it is to me. It's because so many series out there have got the love triangle thing going on. And I'm, you know, and we kind of have that with Gale and Peeta and everything. But it really, to me, was never about a love triangle. It was about the team of Peeta, Katniss, Effie, and Haymitch. So I'm glad that they wrapped that together really nicely.
Definitely.
I'm getting all emotional now. But to shake things up, why don't we talk about a couple of the deaths, or not the deaths, but the changes, a couple of them being the deaths. I'm looking at the list here that Entertainment Weekly put out of the biggest changes from book to screen, and a couple of them are small, like the fact that we don't see Peeta making Finnick and Annie's wedding cake, which, you know, was at first, you know, for book readers, you're kind of like, oh, well, that's a little disappointing, but it wasn't anything huge to get mad about or anything.
Yeah, especially because in the book, I feel like, besides when he did the camouflage painting, like, you don't ever really see him doing anything with being a baker, besides the flashback scene with the burnt bread. It's like, it's something that you just accept to be true about him. You never physically see it. So, yeah, that would have been a nice moment to have if
right.
they had already built it into the storylines in the movies, but it wasn't as big of a thing in the movies. With him being,
right.
you
it
know,
wasn't
a baker.
It wasn't anything to get mad about or anything, but
yeah,
it would have been cool to see, I guess, is what it is.
Yes, it would have. It would have been cool to see for sure.
Yeah. Another difference. I'm not going to read all of them because I think some of them we've already touched on, but let's see. Yes, in the books, there's a lot more interaction between Katniss and Joanna, which I would have liked to see a little bit more of Joanna in the movie, but I understand, you know, it was action-packed already, so it was kind of hard to work in for Joanna. But, you know, I love Joanna, so I would have liked a little bit more, but because I think we don't even see anything of her except she shows up for the voting of whether or not they're going to do another Hunger Games.
After the... Yeah, the beginning when she's in the hospital, we see Joanna, you know, obviously she's trying to, like, bum Morphling off of Katniss. And
right.
that whole thing, the pattern of that, obviously continues for a longer period of time than they showed in the movies. Just the same way how that part of that got cut out in terms of, like, Peeta and Katniss, like, rebuilding their friendship kind of thing. That whole happened while they were still kind of cooped up in the hospital. In a way. So, that was just the one few things that got lost in the shuffle, I guess. And then obviously Joanna's part got lost, too, because it was all part of that same time frame in the story.
Right. Just a minor change, but, you know, I would always appreciate a little bit more Joanna. But, you know, time restraints. We can't have Titanic-length films anymore, apparently. But
apparently.
Even though I would watch it, but whatever. So a little tiny thing, we see Caesar Flickerman, even though it's just, I believe only one scene in part two, but he is not present at all in the second half of Mockingjay, the book. So I think it's just because Stanley Tucci is just too fabulous to not have him in the movie. That's probably what it was.
Probably, because Stanley Tucci was one of the best parts about the movie, let's be real.
Yeah.
In, like, a scary kind of a way. Like, you realize, like, when you're watching the movies, like, in a way that you don't really get from the books, is that I feel like one thing that really happened is that you realize, like, how much we really are, like, this society that she's trying to, like, put a light on. Because we think, we love Caesar. We think he's awesome and charismatic and all this stuff. And, like that's the point of
right.
what she did, the whole story. Like, that's the whole point. And we totally fell for it. Like, we fall for it just in watching the movies and the way they promoted the movies. Like, this whole, like, oh, Capital, like, all these makeup lines and all this other stuff. It just, like, it was so, like, the marketing was just so, like, subliminal. It just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It really, I thought that it was one of the most well-done kind of, like, advertising things that a movie has ever really done. Was,
right.
The way they did all that. And then just Caesar was obviously just, like, the cherry on top that proves that we really are living in this world that
right.
takes out these eccentric people who make light of all this terrible stuff that's going on. And just, so, but yeah, Stanley Tucci, amazing. And I'm glad we got to see him for like 5 seconds.
Right. That 5 seconds was definitely worth it because I just love him. And you're right. It does make you realize, like, oh my God, I totally fell into the Capitol's trap because you just love him so much. You can't help it. And it's just like, wow, this is exactly what the Capitol would want me to do. It's kind of startling. And I love that they do that. It's fantastic. And I do love their marketing strategy. I think even going back to when they were advertising for part one, how they would have the transmissions being interrupted by BD like they did in the books and the movies, I really liked that. And they had like the secret codes on their Twitter account. That was great. But I think there was only one thing that I didn't like about their marketing for this one, and it was because they released a trailer called For Prim, and I was like, if nobody's read the books, they're totally going to know she dies now. You just made this whole moving tribute to Prim, and I'm like, oh my God, you just totally gave away that she's going to die.
Yeah, I think they did it in a way where I think the motivation behind it was to show that the reason Katniss was fighting in general was for Prim, and then obviously if you were smart, you would have picked up on the fact that, oh, wow, like, this is just a big foreshadow to what's going to happen. But, yeah, that is kind of funny that they released just, like, basically a tribute. But if you didn't know any better, you might not realize that it's a tribute until after you see the movie. But
right.
It is kind of funny that they chose to kind of give away something so big without really, obviously, overtly giving it away.
Right, and that was the one trailer that I think I had a tiny bit of an issue with, and that's why I purposely never showed that to my parents, because they didn't read the books, and I didn't want them to know what was going to happen to Prim. I wanted them to just experience it like I had to experience it. So I never showed them that trailer, and I was praying to God that it wouldn't come on TV, because I was like, that's going to give away what's going to happen. But maybe it's just so obvious to us because we've read the books and we already knew what was going to happen. And like you said, to the casual viewer, maybe they wouldn't understand that it is a foreshadowing. But to me, it was like, oh my God, they're going to give away the ending.
Yeah, for sure.
So it was just that one little trailer. But anyways, so going back to the changes list, Masala's death. And I think a lot of the deaths were a little bit less brutal in the movies because they kind of had to stick to that PG-13 rating, where we have Masala. He's just kind of evaporated by that light beam where, you know, in the books, it's obviously way more gruesome. The skin literally melts off of his body, and that's very disturbing. So kind of glad they changed that.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that would have made the cut for the PG-13 rating. But another, I think this is probably one of the biggest differences from book to movie, is Plutarch's letter in the end.
Oh, yeah.
We changed it a little bit.
Yeah, which we obviously, sadly, know why they had to do that, because Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away before they could finish the movie. That whole part, I just, in my head, I couldn't remember if there was a letter from him in the book or not. So, like, I knew just from the get-go that was, like, something that they had to kind of pencil in to make up for the fact that they didn't have him there. But I did notice that they had kind of did some movie magic a lot of people, they had talked, like, oh, they're going to make a hologram of him and, like, all this stuff. Like, whatever they were going to do to make it so those last few scenes that he wasn't able to film. I did notice that there were, like, the one or two times, like, when... I think it was at the execution or something, there was like a cut to him where you could tell that they had just taken a moment from a different part of the movie and just kind of
dropped it in there.
To kind of give him this like last moment of screen time. The letter, that was just an interesting part in general, because I couldn't remember if it was actually in the book or not. So,
right. Yeah, and it is unfortunate they had to change it because of Philip Seymour Hoffman's death. But I think that it works well enough. It does its point. And Plutarch has always been kind of a mysterious character in the books anyways, with, you know, being the game maker, but still helping to orchestrate this whole escape plan and tipping off Katniss as to what the arena is about and catching fire.
Yeah.
So it worked well enough the way they handled it. And I was impressed that they handled it that way.
Definitely.
Because we know it's a lot more drawn out in the book. She has, you know, she's waiting, I think it even describes, for a couple weeks even. And she describes it as all she does is sing. So they changed that a little bit, which I think actually worked. You know, and you got to do what you got to do. So I think it worked well enough, though. More snow. Yeah, we talked about that. I think the last kind of change that we had is in the book, Katniss is very despondent for a while when she goes back to 12, and it is Greasy Say from the books that comes and cooks and cleans for her before Peeta comes back, and we kind of, you know, can't have too long of a movie, so they kind of dropped that out, and besides, they hadn't really established Greasy Say in the movies, so it was kind of hard for them to introduce a new character at that point. So I don't think I really have a problem with them changing that, because they brought Peeta in with the planting the primroses, which I think everybody was emotional about.
Yeah. Yeah. And because they kind of just, after that initial scene with the cat, they showed her, you know, hunting and kind of getting back to her life, just the way it would have been if she was still in 12 and nothing had happened. So obviously in terms of pacing and for the sake of time, they had to move it along a little bit more than was probably, you know, natural and or just the way it happened in the book. But yeah, I don't think it really hindered from the storyline at all to kind of just progress time a little bit faster, especially because then they got to Peeta faster. I always appreciate that. So.
Yeah, but I think it worked the way they did that. So I'm not too upset about that. Overall, I think that I didn't really have too many problems with what was changed, honestly, because, you know, you got to keep into account, they don't have the time to show every single little detail that we want, as much as we would love that to happen, even though we got two films. I think sometimes a lot of people don't realize that, and I think that's where a lot of complaints from book readers come from, is they don't take into account the fact that, you know, Hollywood's just not going to allow that. You can't have every little detail, because then the movie would be like 8 hours long.
Yeah.
But I think it works.
The way stories are told in books, when you are like, you're getting every single description, like you're reading it out on your own, it's different than when you're watching it in a movie. It's just not everything translates into like a movie or screenplay the way it does in a book. So, I agree. I'm definitely one to always be, like, I've never been too nitpicky about things being different from books to movies.
Right.
Unless it just, like, completely misses the point entirely.
Right.
Like, I'm always just kind of, like, I take it all with a grain of salt, as long as like the overall message of the story is there and like the major plot points aren't terribly changed, then I'm like pretty okay with the way that filmmakers decided to do things. But I agree that a lot of people don't take that into consideration when they watch movies.
Right. And I always try to keep an open mind with that. I know sometimes it can be hard because you're so protective over your books, but I think we lucked out with The Hunger Games. We got a good adaptation. So many people do not get their good adaptations. You know, just to think of a few, I know I read the Beautiful Creatures books, and the film adaptation I was not happy with.
Yeah.
Because those changes were just too obvious and too... There was no point to the changes, and I've never read the Percy Jackson series, but from what I hear, people don't feel that it's an accurate adaptation. But I think we lucked out with The Hunger Games. We got a pretty fair adaptation, and what was changed, I think almost at times even made it better, because you get a more cohesive understanding of what the story is.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that. In a lot of places, them adding, like, subtracting certain things and then adding new things that weren't in the books, like, it just kind of balanced everything out and just made it more of a, you know, complex story. Because obviously there's only so much you can do when a book is in first-person perspective.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's very hard.
It's very hard to kind of break away from just, like, that one train of thought. So when they can add small things to kind of help you understand things better, I'm always all for that.
Yeah, I definitely think that the changes were positive, because you see, being in Katniss's mindset all the time, sometimes you have to kind of remind yourself, she's a confused teenage girl right now. Of course she's going to have these feelings. But, you know, to some people, that would be hard to understand. So I think that, you know, that's the good part of translating from book to film. You get to have a little more leeway about what you could show.
For sure.
But I think that I've reached the end of what I had on my list that I needed to discuss. I could go on for hours, but, you know, we're broaching on, we're almost at 2 hours now. We've almost gone as long as the film. Even though I could continue on for days and days, I think nobody's going to listen to that, A. And B, that would stress us all out, because then we would never stop crying. So did you have anything specifically you wanted to get off your chest about this movie?
No, I think we pretty much covered most of it. I think just overall that I walked away satisfied, like, with the series as a whole. Like, when you look back on all four movies, it's just... It's a great book series. It was a great series of movies. Like, I wasn't overtly disappointed with anything that happened in any of the movies per se. It solidified just my love for this whole franchise, both in terms of the novels and the films. And I wish there was more, but obviously it's time to let it go and find a new thing to be excited over. But I just think that I applaud Francis Lawrence for everything that he did to kind of elevate the series in the last three movies. And obviously Jennifer Lawrence was the most perfect Katniss we could have ever imagined. And Josh Hutcherson just blew me out of the water with Peeta, obviously, in the first movie. I don't think he really got his time to shine in terms of how he portrayed Peeta. But from the second movie on, I was always very impressed with the way that portrayed, and I really couldn't ask for more in terms of the way the movies turned out.
Right. And I think, like I said earlier, we just got so lucky with this adaptation. And even though I know, of course, we would love to have more, I think, you know, you kind of have to acknowledge that it's got to end somewhere and it can't go on forever and ever. That's what fan fiction's for it to go on forever. But... you know, you have to have an end, and unfortunately we've reached our end, but I think we got a pretty good end. We got a solid understanding of what happened in the books. I could not have chosen anyone better for any role, I think. I think everybody nailed it. Jennifer Lawrence as Katniss, Josh Hutcherson as PETA just blew me away. You know, Elizabeth Banks, we talked about, just absolutely fabulous as Effie. Stanley Tucci just does a great job as Sir Flickerman. Even like the smaller things that, you know, aren't as important in the books, and we just love them in the movies because of Stanley Tucci. You know, just so many of the characters. Liam Hemsworth, even though Gale's not my favorite character, you gotta appreciate Liam Hemsworth. But
yeah, I agree. I definitely think in the movies Liam Hemsworth gave Gale a little bit more depth than he had in the books. So I applaud him for that.
Yes, thank you, Liam Hemsworth, for making me, you know, not hate Gale all the way. That was good. You know, Woody Harrelson, of course, is Haymitch. Then we have Sam Claflin as Finnick, and Jenna Malone as Joanna. And we've got all these people who have been added over the past couple movies. Like, we've got Coyne, played by Julianne Moore, Natalie Dormer, who plays Cressida. Just so many people. I can't list them all because there's too many. But they all just contributed to the movies and made them just perfect. I don't think I would have recast anyone. Not a single person.
No, not at all.
I mean, even Donald Sutherland, who I hate President Snow so much, but Donald Sutherland just nailed it.
For sure. Especially in the you know, from Catching Fire on, when we got to see more of him, I was just, because in the first movie, I think that I was kind of like, oh, okay, President Snow, like, he's not that intimidating. But then he really started laying it on thick, and I definitely applaud the casting choice of Donald Sutherland, because he really kind of amped it up, and just by the end, there was nothing more satisfying than to see him die, honestly, like, in the movie. So,
right.
I just, the casting, yeah, overall was fantastic. The production, the costumes, oh my god, and just
everything. Oh my god.
Beyond
yes,
anyone's
everything.
Wildest dreams, and I think we got lucky with a great set of books and a great set of movies.
We did, and even though I'm sad to see it go, I am happy with what we got, and, you know, there's not much else I can say without just being repetitive or crying, so let's not have that.
Yeah.
That'd be horrible, because I've already done too much of that with this series. So we're going to wrap it up, and we thank you for listening to us vent about Mockingjay Part 2, and we hope that you have the same feelings that we did. And if you didn't, let us know for some reason. If you think you had another perspective, we'd always love to hear it. But thank you so much for taking this journey with us. And we have now reached an hour and 53 minutes. That's almost the entire length of the movie. But we had to. You just have to. It's the last movie. We kind of had to give it a send-off. But thank you guys so much for listening to us ramble on. If you would like to catch more from Variety Radio Online, you can always check out the VRO.com, where everything is going to be. This podcast is also going to be up on audioboom.com/channel/Variety Radio Online. We're on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter is at the VRO. We're also on Instagram, I believe. We are on iTunes even. So go check all of that out, and we would love to hear from you guys, your thoughts about Mockingjay or anything else for that matter, because we have tons of television shows going on. I believe, Emily, you do Once Upon a Time with Rachel, correct?
Yes, I do.
Yes. And I've got a couple of shows going on. I've got Supernatural, American Horror Story, and The Walking Dead. So there's also other shows out there if those maybe aren't your taste. But thank you guys so much. And we're going to wrap it up. And just remember, there are much worse games to play.